This podcast is recorded on stolen and unceded Aboriginal land.
We acknowledge the First Nations and elders of this country and join their calls for justice. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
It's murder on the polling booth. But he's not found guilty yet. No, no.
You can't say
he's
yet.
Out on bail with a GPS. He has not been found guilty. He is just accused. Uh-oh. Innocent till proven guilty. The candidate for Gold Coast Division 7, Ryan Baildon Lumsden, is only alleged accused of murdering his stepfather last year and is pleading not guilty, I believe.
Pleading not guilty, he's going to fight the trial in court. There are limited details, but yes, there are lots of reports, including in the BBC. I saw once again Australia mentioned. This made international news.
Gold Coast mentioned.
That a Gold Coast city councillor was out there. He's only 32 years old, handing out how to vote cards and fighting the good fight with an ankle bracelet on so that the police can keep track of his movements. He's accused of killing his stepfather in August last year, and we don't know how that's going to happen. That's going to sort of shake out. But he loves democracy. He thinks the voters are always going to get it right. And they can make up their own mind as to whether they think that he's the right guy for them.
Meanwhile, suspended on full pay, isn't he? Although they said, and if he'd won, he would have been suspended again, state government said, pending the outcome of the trial. It looked like early in the night, it looked like he might be winning, but I think he's now back in third place with about 20% of the vote, which is still wild.
That's still a lot. That's still quite high.
That's crazy, right?
Got charged, then got suspended on full pay. And the full pay is like $160K or something like that, like $160,000 to be a city councillor in Gold Coast, which is pretty wild. Yeah. And then so his constituents, about 50,000 people in his division, have no voice on the local council.
Yeah.
And then, so you're saying that if he was re-elected, then potentially could have been suspended again, which means they would still have no voice on council.
State government said they would have. Yeah, so they would have no representation. I mean, it is – I fear that this conversation may come back to bite us if details of the trial come out with it being kind of grim, because I'd heard some allusions to that his stepfather, who he's accused of murdering, had, controlled his relationships, finances, things that. So, I'm sure there's more to the story, but it is just quite wild to know that, yes, you can run for election while being accused and out on bail for alleged murder.
What would you do if someone asked you about your ankle bracelet while you're standing up?
Surely everyone knows.
People don't follow politics that closely.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I would love to know, if there were voters who were sort of like, it's odd, isn't it? But I mean, they'd be on the Gold Coast. Maybe that's getting him some votes. Who knows?
Meanwhile, Gold Coast Mayor Tom Tate has absolutely romped at home, been returned.
A fourth term, which is a record. I think that's history making.
Incredible. People love Tom Tate. And there was a great interview with him earlier in the week. This is in the ABC, I think. Gold Coast Mayor Tom Tate said on Saturday he was humbly buoyant after talking to voters. I talk to people in the line and you get a feeling, he said. I make phone calls to booth capitals from all over the city and the feedback has been coming in nicely. I'm not getting abuse like last time. There were some weirdos last time.
he says it like it is, you know? He doesn't mince words.
Good on you, Tommy Tate.
Tommy Tate. Real character. What is in the sunshine down there?
I'm doing my recycling. I've given up eating meat. I'm eating bugs. And yet Adam Bandt's flying around the country on private jets. Is the climate crisis real?
We're stuck with the hosts of Chapo Shithouse podcast.
This is a serious danger to Australia.
Hello, everyone. This is Serious Danger. I am Tom Ballard coming to you from Naarm, Melbourne on Wurundjeri and Boonwurrung country. With me, Emerald Moon. Hello, Emerald.
Hello. I'm in Manjin on Yugra and Turrbal country. And sorry the episode's late. We had an election. Well, a few, actually.
So many goddamn politics going on across the great state of Greensland. There was another Greenslide, everyone. Can confirm. Lock it in.
Feels like a good time to remind people that this is not an official Greens Party podcast. Mm-hmm. It is made possible with the help of the Green Institute and produced by Michael the Griff Griffin. But, this week we're talking about Queensland. There's local government elections, there's two by-elections, and then because we love elections, we're also talking about election stuff and electoral reform. Oof. Is that right, Tom?
God, this is deep nerd fest shit, this episode.
It really is. Oh, you love it, you sickos.
I did a gig in Geelong on Friday night, and a guy, oh, I've got to forget his name now, but he was lovely. Listener to the pod, brought along a copy of Inside the Greens for me to sign, has already read the book, but is also listening to our discussion of the book on the Patreon as well. And he describes the process as very dry.
Oh, God. That's not, don't say that. The Patreon is really good, guys. We just put out a Patreon episode that, sorry, is not about Inside the Greens. It's another episode of That's My Jam, insert sound effect, where we review Kitchen Cabinet episodes with Annabelle Crabb. And this week we did Richard Di Natale, and then there's one about bipartisanship with Anthony Albanese and Christopher Pan. It's very fun. So you should become a patron. It's only $3 a month or whatever more you want to give us, and it helps keep the show going. It pays Mike's wages and also helps us do live shows like the ones that we have coming up in Nam, Melbourne, and Mianjin, Brisbane. I should say shout out first to the people who have just subscribed to the Patreon. Empirical Fox, Lucy twice, or is that two Lucys?
Two different Lucys, I believe.
Two different Lucys. Lucy times two. Wow. I love Lucy and Lucy. Mitchell, Morgan, Nathan, Alex, Matthew, Omar, Electra, and Linda. Thanks.
Your money also goes to Adam Bant's expenses as well.
So exactly. We yes, that, so that he can continue hiring those jets, which is really important. Really important. Thanks, Adam. We will be borrowing the jet, or I will, to get down to Nam, Melbourne on Saturday the 6th of April at 1:30 p.m. for our show, live show at the Comedy Republic. And then Tom will be flying it back up to Mianjin, Brisbane on Saturday the 27th of April for our show at Good Chat Comedy Club, 2 p.m. Tickets are on sale now, and they are selling fast. So please check the show notes or seriousdangerpod.com for the links to buy those. And if you weren't already on board, maybe this some special news will get you on board for the Nam Melbourne show. Drum roll. We can announce that our special guest for that show will be Osman, aka Oz Faruqi. Yay. We wanted to get Oz on the show for ages, so I'm really fucking excited. How do you describe Oz? Writer,
cultural critic, smart guy. Happens to be the son of a Green senator. But the
Marine son, but yeah.
Nepo baby.
Or is Marine his mum?
No, we love Oz. He's a good friend of ours. Former Greens candidate. I believe he ran in maybe in like student elections or some kind of local election in Sydney, I think.
Okay.
Has been involved with the party before. I think he's got a really smart political brain. Actually helped us record the demo, the first ever demo of Serious Danger that we didn't release when we were trying to figure out how the show was going to work. He was a fantastic
guest. The lost episode.
Yes. And we've been trying to get him back for quite a while. He does culture writing at the moment for Nine Fairfax, but is also, yes, always dipping his toe into political debate every now and again. Great dude. He's going to be joining us in Nam, Melbourne, Saturday, April the 6th, 1:30 p.m. Honestly, the tickets are like close to going for that one, so I reckon Oz's name will tip it over. If you're considering it at all and you can come along, we'd love to see you there. All the details and then the ticket links are in the show notes for you. Brisbane guests still to be announced. Still working on that.
But yeah, I think you're going to like it. I think you're going to like it. We'll announce that one soon, I would imagine.
That's right. We are getting Ryan Baildon Lumsden.
Right, that's right. And Tom Tate. So it's going to be great. It's going to be amazing. Yeah.
Know then that it is the year
2024.
The known universe,
Brisbane,
is ruled by the
LNP.
In this time, the most precious substance in the universe is the
preferences
melange. Hidden away within the rocks of
Brisbane
are a people known as the
Greens,
who have long held a prophecy that a man would come.
John Low.
Who would lead them to true freedom.
The preferences must flow.
So, it's election season here in Queensland, baby.
Ding, ding, ding.
We had three this weekend. We had two by-elections in Ipswich West and former Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk's old seat of Nala, so two kind of Labor heartlands, and a lot of people were watching them very closely to see what happens with the vote, given that we have a state election later this year. We also had local government elections across the state, and the biggest one being Brisbane City Council, which is biggest council in the country and the last remaining kind of like LNP heartland, or it's, what is it, the second most powerful, second biggest LNP government of sorts in the country.
Yeah. On the mainland, did you follow, the only one, I guess.
On only one on the mainland. That's right. That's what the stat is. Did you follow any of the coverage? Were you, you know, watching the ABC live feed?
I did not. No, I am a political nerd, but I draw the line at local council elections in another state.
But it's different.
But it is different and interesting. I'm really interested to hear. And I was going across some of the results on social media, but generally last night I was in bed by about 8 p.m.
Must be nice.
Had a big day of volunteering for the Greens at the Festival of Colour in West Footscray and was very tired. And then I watched Asteroid City and went to sleep.
Okay. Well,
that was my Saturday night.
The problem is, I mean, at the time of recording, we don't necessarily know exactly how a lot of things are going to play out, but it does look like the Greens have picked up Paddington, which was the main, I think that's what I was saying. I was like, I'm hopeful that we'll get Paddington and retain the Gabba pretty comfortably.
Really comfortably, didn't we? It's like a 6% swing, yeah?
Yeah, and that's with losing Jono as the incumbent. Like that was definitely, you know, I think a lot of people assumed that we might get a swing against us in the Gabba because you lose an incumbent. That's a big change. Like it's hard to build up that reputation in the community with the new councillor, Trina Massey. But people obviously fucking love her because we got, big swings in the Gabba. I think that it'll be very difficult for the major parties to, ever come back in the Gabba.
The ABC website says very safe green seat. Very you love safe to see green it. Seat. You love I to see fucking it.
Love to see it. and picked up big swings, like positive swings across the board, some really big swings in some interesting seats. But whether that means additional wards is still TBC, and a few seats are really on a nice edge and it's doing things to my heart, particularly Walter Taylor is just flipping back and forth. It's like 50.4% to 50.6% or whatever it is at the moment. 49.6, I guess it'd have to be.
Why is there a ward called Walter Taylor? What the hell? Why is there?
There must be someone who was their last name was Walter Taylor because there's also a Walter Taylor Bridge. Okay. Like there's the bridge, which is where people used to live. People lived in this bridge. Interesting story. There's like a little house in the big fat bridge pylon. Mm-hmm. And yes, Cooperoo also, it's kind of unclear to me how close that is. That is where the Gabba campaign was very, like the Gabba Stadium and East Brisbane State School centered a lot around Cooperoo. Right.
Yep.
And it sort of looked like a lot of swings there, but now it's not looking like it will fall to the Greens, but I've heard that maybe closer than we think. I think there might be. I guess the long story short is like there's going to be some scrutineering. It's similar to maybe Brisbane in 2022 where we didn't know for a while what was actually going to happen. It was really on a knife's edge.
And that's wild, right? Like I'm looking at the ABC result here. So so there's a 7% swing to the Greens, a 7.7% swing away from Labor. So the LNP actually increases, gets a small swing to them and hangs on to the seat, even with this massive change from Labor to Greens has sort of played out there. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's kind of one of the – that's like a defining feature of a lot of the swings across the board is, Labor's vote in Brisbane just going down, like to really quite strikingly low levels. And there's this narrative, you know, I think even the LNP, there was a live panel on the ABC, on ABC Radio Brisbane, that was then streamed on their Facebook that I think was, it had Anthony Green. So it was kind of like a new way of covering the local government election in a way that they would cover other elections on the ABC. And they had Greens, Labor and LNP MPs on a panel. The LNP was saying, well, clearly, you know, it looks like what the Greens are, they said the Greens are an existential threat to Labor, which you love to hear it.
Yep.
They're trying to say, of course, that we're not a threat to them. But it's true. It does look like, Labor is just really withering away to nothing. And a lot of that is going to the Greens.
And again, it's very hard to sort of get your head around this in a Labor-controlled state, right? I mean, it just really seems like the local politics and the state politics, these are just sort of two different worlds, or people don't necessarily make the connection in those way, or Labor, the party, doesn't address them in the same way and has sort of seeded the ground when it comes to Brisbane City Council.
It's a really good question because, like, I don't know enough about the structure of the Labor Party to know who does the strategy, who is running these campaigns, and, like, is it not the same people? Because in the Greens, of course, like in Brisbane, it's the same people who are developing state strategy and then running Brisbane City Council campaigns. And so like there will largely be similar trends across those. Whereas, it does just look so different from local to state to federal for Queensland Labor. I guess, and the problem is, particularly in seats like Walter Taylor, where it's so close, we've got huge, like really impressive swings in Walter Taylor. If I can find the last that I looked, like, yeah, we, or maybe I can get the swing up for what we've actually got in Walter Taylor, but Walter Taylor's swing of 6 points, almost 7%.
Yeah.
Which is pretty massive, but Labor's vote has dropped to like not even 14%, 13.5% at the moment it's sitting at in Walter Taylor, which is just so low. And that is actually what is causing that seat to be, still be on a knife's edge. And it's true, like they almost seem to run dead in Labor, but I really don't know whether that is a deliberate strategy, whether they think that it's better off to just focus on state and maybe people don't want Labor at all levels. I don't know that I necessarily buy that. I think they purely are just not, they haven't figured it out how to run in Brisbane very well. And the more that the Greens grow, obviously the less they do. And where that's really a problem is when we have optional preferential voting, which is why, like if we had compulsory preferential voting, we would be winning a whole lot of more of these seats that are on a knife's edge. And we would have won Paddington probably last time is the conventional wisdom. And Labor said they were going to legislate compulsory preferential voting in local government elections and then like weirdly backed out. And I think that's still a source of much, what's the word? Perplexion? Like it's very perplexing for us to like, because they are losing, like that means that the LNP is winning and holding seats that maybe Labor could have won if they just went to compulsory preferential voting, yet somehow they seemed to bow to this campaign from the local, the LGAQ, Local Government Association of Queensland, to keep it optional preferential voting, which is, well, I mean, what, okay, do you, like, are you one of those people, what do you think about optional preferential voting as opposed to compulsory?
I'm so glad you asked. I don't know. It seems.
Really?
It seems.
And strong views?
I don't have strong views about it, to be honest. No. I would argue that, yeah, compulsory voting is compulsory voting. And, you know, if you believe in the benefits of listing all your preferences, then I guess that's.
Yeah. So your vote isn't wasted.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, but I do not. I just cannot agree with, like, I seem to have a fundamentally different way of looking at it than the people who are like, well, you shouldn't have to vote for someone that. Like a candidate that you oppose. And I'm like, a last preference to me is not a vote for someone. It's a vote against someone. Mm. Like full preferential voting means that you get to fully express your desires, your preferences, your wishes, and ensure that your vote is distributed in that manner. Whereas, yeah, if you have optional preferential, there's more of a chance that your vote will simply be wasted, exhausted. Mm. Like, yeah, so I think it's really undemocratic. And the LNP run really strongly in council elections on just vote one.
Just vote one.
I mean, granted, like I will say that the preference distribution, like the exhaustion of Labor votes in Walter Taylor, for example, where I was looking, is much lower this council election than in previous years. And they were at the booths, I will say, really strongly pushing to number every box because I think they knew that that was the only way they were going to get the LNP out. But even so, that's a whole bunch of votes just being wasted, exhausted.
Can we acknowledge the fact that the Labor candidate in Walter Taylor's name is Rebecca Hack?
Rebecca Hack. And you know what's really funny is their candidate in the Gabba was Beck Mack. Rebecca McIntosh, and they call her Beck Mack. So it's Beck Hack and Beck Mack. I'm like, just make another kind of candidate. It's like the Labor candidate factory just spitting them out. Yeah, not even trying.
These ChatGPT candidates that Labor keeps coming out with, they're not doing the job, y'all.
Yeah. Really quickly, we can come back to council, but I did want to kind of touch on the by-elections.
Well, can we talk about our boy, the mayor? Is Jono Sriranganathan going to be the mayor of Brisbane, everyone?
He's not going to be the mayor of Brisbane, believe it or not.
Okay.
I do think that, like, I have feelings, I guess, around, I think there were people who genuinely thought that Jono was in with a shot of becoming mayor. And I guess, you know, like I say, if something wild and crazy and unexpected, I'm sure it was possible, but his vote has gone up by, at the moment, it looks like about 5%. That's kind of changed as votes have come in. That's about what I would expect.
Yep.
I think that that's a good result. I don't think that he expected to become mayor. But I don't, I wonder if there are people who would be like, oh, the way that campaign was kind of framed as maybe we're going to have a Greens mayor and it's going to be this massive transformative change. Like, do you think people will be really let down?
Well, no, I mean, you know, sometimes our expectations for the Greens, even the Queensland Greens, even the Brisbane, even John O'Shea Ranganathan, you know, just need to be put into context, perhaps. I mean, you know, if this is, am I right in thinking this is the first time that there's been a perhaps serious Greens campaign for mayor, or one that had the level of cut through, and this is the best that the Greens have ever done in this
it's
Lord Mayor
race?
It's
certainly been the biggest. Yeah, definitely.
So 20%, which is sort of, you know, not miles off what Max got before in the election before he won Griffith, you know, like if, and I'm sure Jonathan is a very smart dude who's, you know, fully aware of multi, you know, multi campaign strategies. And that's been the Queensland Green strategy for state and federal seats. So, you know, a 5% swing, getting you to 20%, scaring the shit out of the LNP and pushing the debate and laying out the claims and the kind of policies that a Lord Mayor can make. I mean, that's all good stuff. Yes, I agree that, and indeed, Jono may well have subscribed to this view too. The idea of them actually taking home this election was not necessarily on the table. Perhaps they'd be disappointed with the lack of a swing against the LNP. I mean, the LNP has increased their primary vote slightly by 0.22%, so that's maybe a bit of a surprise. And yes, a lot of that increase in the vote seems to have come out of the Labor vote, right? Like they've had a 5% swing against them, basically 4.5% swing against them. So. Yeah.
And what I would say as well is, I mean, looking again, like the numbers counting is still happening. It stopped at 10 p.m. last night. But the swings, the mayoral swings in Greens seats, Brisbane, Griffith, Ryan, are way bigger. Like from the numbers that I'm looking at,
right,
it's looking like mapped across those seats. You're looking at more like 12%, 14%, maybe even higher swings the mayoral vote. And that's interesting as well, because I think that the major parties and particularly the LNP really tried to push this line that, oh, there's going to be a split in the vote. People are going to maybe they'll vote for the Greens locally, but they won't vote for Jono because he's so radical and he's such a turnoff and maybe you, and he'll be losing you votes. And the LNP were trying to run this line in the last couple of weeks that Greens candidates in areas like Walter Taylor or Paddington were refusing to display, like trying to distance themselves from Jono, which I literally haven't seen any of it. I think that's quite strange. Like I haven't seen anyone do that. But I think this really kind of puts pay to or whatever, you know, squashes that idea, surely.
Cool. Sorry, thanks. Sorry to derail you there. But yeah, tell us about these by-elections.
By-elections, yeah. So two by-elections, Ipswich West and Inala. Ipswich West, there was a vacancy there because Labor MP Jim Madden resigned after, like he resigned to contest the council elections, but in the wake of much controversy. Yeah.
Okay.
He would have lost pre-selection anyway. I'm not entirely across like exactly what was going on there, but I think there were allegations of improper conduct towards his electorate office staff.
Okay.
He was embattled, I would say. He was an embattled MP who resigned and then contested council. I don't know how he's done in council, actually. I should look. But anyway, so the Greens didn't run a candidate there, but the swing to the LNP at the time of recording on the ABC website is 18.7%.
Right.
It's a 15% swing against Labor.
Yep.
Legalized cannabis has got a big swing, 9.8%. That could largely be picking up the Greens vote now that there's no Greens candidate from last time. And a swing against One Nation, which is nice to see, but maybe also some of that has gone to legalised cannabis. But that is, they're looking like they are potentially going to lose Ipswich West, which is meant to be, that's kind of like a Labor stronghold seat. And then meanwhile in Inala, which was Premier Palaszczuk's seat, again, there's a 30.9% swing against Labor at the moment.
Right.
Like, that is fucking hectic. A 12.5% swing to the LNP. Looks like an independent has picked up 10% of the vote. And interestingly, even like the Greens got a positive swing in Inala, which, you know, that certainly was not a really well-resourced campaign. Navdeep Singh, who has run on the Senate ticket before and is like an engineer, really brilliant, kind of has run as a candidate a few times, really hard worker in the Greens, but there's council elections going on. We're working up towards a state election. Like, I don't think that the party was exactly pouring resources into that by-election, but, and so to still get a 2.4% swing, particularly with that huge swing against Labor, I think is quite interesting out there.
Yeah, it looks like Labor lost heaps. I mean, Labor's hung on to the seat, we should make it clear. Like
So Nala they will keep.
The margin is so huge. And
yeah.
Is that the same seat that Anna Palaszczuk's dad held?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, long legacy seat.
It's
so
real Harlan.
Yes. And massive swing could still hang on to it. But yes, 30% swing against them and then everybody else wins. Everyone else has picked up all those votes have gone to, yes, big little bum for the Greens, big bum for the Independent and legalized cannabis and stuff. And obviously the LNP has got a 12% swing to them. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously the narrative is like, oh, Labor should be really scared with the election coming up at the end of the year. I mean, I don't know if the by-election results will transfer over. Certainly that's not necessarily what's been reflected in polls. Like recent polling for statewide kind of for state election is looking like the LNP could win government. But I'm still unsure. I'm still unsure how October will go.
Yeah, I mean, there's all these theories that, you know, by-elections are also the electorate giving them a message, and there's been lots of examples of state seats where a party has won and then in a by-election and the state election has come up and that seat has been being returned to the party where you would traditionally expect them to do well, so that might be part of it. Yeah. When's the state election again? In
October.
October, yeah, right, okay. Mm. So this LNP guy has got, got 6 months or even less? Basically has to start campaigning again straight away to hang on to it come October. But there you go. I mean, and that's the general wisdom, what people think, that the Labor government's just tired or Stephen Miles isn't cutting through or people.
Yeah. I think that they are doing much better with Stephen Miles. They've had a bit of a pickup once Stephen Miles replaced Anastasia Palaszczuk. But is it enough? I think is still I think it's still like they've been in power for a long time. Are people sick of it? People are obviously struggling. Cost of living and housing. And the other one people are saying is, you know, Labor government, are they doing enough on crime, quote unquote, crime crisis? That's certainly what the LNP is running hard on. And that was a bit of the narrative around these by-elections is that apparently in Ipswich West that the LNP candidate ran hard on being tough on crime or doing something on crime, which the Labor isn't. And they're saying that that could be part of the reason why. Again, yeah, I don't really know if that will be the deciding factor for state, but it is certainly an issue, sadly, up here in Queensland, who can be the toughest on crimest, even when clearly that, as we know, like locking more people up just means that it actually means you're failing and you are going to make crime worse because people come out of prison and do more crime. Rehabilitation services.
Yes, but also was Ryan Bailed and Loveson running on being tough
running
on crime?
On crime? Yeah, good fucking question. Fucking
I know. Electronic ankle bracelet?
Not down there. Yeah, no.
Any other city council stories we should be across?
Other good news. Our friend Andrew Lamming, my nemesis, my opponent from 2019, former member for Bowman, absolute fucking nut job.
Yep.
It got owned in the Redland City Council race. He decided to run for mayor after whatever losing pre-selection for Bowman. And then he was like, I'll give this a crack, and was, as usual, an absolute nut job throughout the campaign. He's come third in the race. Despite having been the LNP member for the area for like fucking ages, I don't even know, more than a decade, long time. He apparently during the campaign, his opponent, who looks like the successful candidate, Joss Mitchell, had to get a court injunction to stop Lamming from putting up signs that say Joss equals Greens, like with a dollar sign for the S. And Lamming argues that actually it's not to do with the Greens. He says, quote, the signs say the word green and then the dollar sign at the end and are referring to money that comes from the, quote, green sector, for backers, financiers and funders of green initiatives.
Oh, Jesus.
He said that Murray Hassler has made significant donations to her campaign and is also a well-known Greens donor. Never heard of this guy. But anyway, please, Andrew Lamming, give it a fucking rest. Just go away now.
Is his awful online behavior sort of still hanging around him? Like,
I think he's still,
about how
still doing that.
Trolling people on Facebook and stuff.
Yeah. Like known for setting up Facebook pages, pretending to set fake community groups that are just him and viciously trolling people online. Yeah, I don't know what he's going to do with himself now because he clearly really loves this stuff, but I don't know. Who knows? Sunshine Coast is also interesting because the Greens candidate for division, is it five maybe? Tracy Burton is ahead at the time of counting. So she was on 37% of the vote roughly, ahead of the other two candidates. But I don't know if the other two candidates preferences might flow between them, and then that she might be excluded, like she might lose on two-party preferred. But that's still very interesting.
Mm.
That would be the first Greens. That would be the first time the Queensland Greens win a councillor outside of Brisbane.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. Ipswich, where we were also quite hopeful, like we ran two. It's a division where you get two candidates for the division, I guess multi-party, multi-member electorate kind of thing, and it's first past the post.
What different cities have different...
Yeah, it's really fucking confusing systems. And annoying.
Oh, my God. Okay.
It's first past the post there. We ran two candidates. Honestly, should not have fucking done that. We've literally, like, split the vote evenly between those two candidates. They've both got about 13% each. There's, like, massive, like, really good community advocates out there. Danielle Martin is, like, a really strong local community advocate and a good candidate. But they, I don't know why, decided to run two candidates and just, like, split it between themselves, and so are looking like... No, I don't think that it's going to happen for them.
Neither of them will get up?
Okay. Right.
Sorry?
Neither of them will get up?
I don't think so, because it looks like there are other candidates that are, well, yeah, there are three other candidates that are above 20%.
Concentrated. Yeah. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Oi, oi, oi.
Oi, oi, oi. Yeah, the
other does everyone hate the Electoral Commission? Did they run out of ballots or something at some point?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is a weird thing about council. It's almost like, so last Brisbane City Council election was during COVID, right? And there were low turnout rates, and it was weird because everyone kind of voted early. This time, the Electoral Commission made a really concerted effort to discourage people from voting early, discourage people from doing postal voting, and make them vote on the day. And yet they still seem to have not prepared for the idea that people would actually come and vote on the day, and apparently had not enough staff, and some places even ran out of ballots because all these people showed up to fucking vote, and there were like massive lines, 2-hour waits apparently in some places. And this is why on the night there's not much to see, because it didn't start getting results until like 9 p.m. People were still voting at like 7 p.m. because if they were still in line, they stay in line, they can still vote. The both booths were staying open after 6 p.m. I don't really know, like why they thought, what the fuck happened there? I really don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you got 4 years to prepare for this kind of stuff, guys. And why were they encouraging people to vote on the day?
I don't really know. I guess that there's just, I mean, historically, the idea is the only reason you vote early is if you can't vote on the day. And maybe they're like, well, we can't act like, we don't want to be staffing. We don't want to be having 2 weeks of election day, staffing wise, resources wise. It's meant to be there's the one day. And so they were kind of trying to push it back to that, but I don't really know why that is, in the long
term. What
do
they do when they run out of ballot paper? Do they draw up their own? Do they say, just text me or email me?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess they had to get more. But it's a bit, and then the ABC was also, the results, I don't know if you were watching, was like getting some weird shit coming through on Anthony Green's calculator. It's showing up with like one candidate having like 96% of the vote, and then it'll jump back the other way. So it's a bit of a schmozzle, I think, because my like overall take on this election, and particularly the Brisbane City Council election, is that we're confused about how to treat this election, where it is effectively, it's almost like a state government, which I think I've said before, like it is massive. It's a massive voting population. It has got councillors who are paid big sums of money to do a full-time job representing their electorate or their ward. It's a huge council with a huge budget. And so the political and media class are kind of starting to realize that they need to treat it like a serious election. But at the same time, it's unclear what the general voting public thinks, and I think a lot of people still don't care about council, and that makes it hard for the Greens, because it's hard to recruit volunteers for an election that like doesn't really have any buzz. It doesn't have like a fun, you know, a movement vibe. Like it's just a fucking council election. Who wants to volunteer for that? It's harder to have meaningful conversations with voters when they're like, no, I don't really know. I don't really care about what council does, harder to, have conversations with people in the booths. You can tell this, the Brisbane Times, I don't know if you saw this, there was a reel that the Brisbane Times did on their socials that was like they printed out photos of the three Lord Mayoral candidates and were handing them to voters in Brisbane being like, who is this? And no one knows who anyone, no one knew who the Labor candidate was. A few people kind of recognized the mayor and a few people knew who Jono was, but it's like ordinary people are just, they do not care about this election. And I think, there's this like disconnect or there's a confusion as to how we treat this election that's still causing some weird shit with Brisbane City Council, I think.
Well, yeah, it's also the fact that the LNP has been in power for 20 years. I mean, like, that must play a factor in that, you know, often sometimes people find when there's, when a certain party just dominates a certain electorate, people do kind of just not view it as much of a political contest at all, you know, and things are chugging along. And if you're having a relatively nice, okay time in Brisbane, perhaps you think that, you know, the status quo, there's a level of status quo and incumbency bias, I suppose that's out there.
Which is why it's frustrating and so disingenuous. Like, I think that the major parties are really trying to seize on it looking like maybe the Greens have, quote unquote, only picked up one additional ward last night to be like, oh, well, we were promised a green slide. You said you're going to have a green slide. Is this a disappointing result for the Greens? Is it the Greens not doing very well in, you know, their, quote unquote, heartland? And it's like, this is traditionally LNP heartland. Like, the growth of the Greens in Brisbane is a very new thing. In somewhere like the West Side, which is where they're focusing on, somewhere like Walter Taylor, was like LNP stronghold for a very long time up until, I don't know, like 6 years ago. And then we have gained votes. We have won swings in every single election since then in Brisbane while your vote goes down. But the problem is that, like the LNP holds these seats and it is going to take a lot to chip away at that. The LNP holds whatever it is, 19 out of the 26 wards on Brisbane City Council and have held power for the last like 20 years. And they have so much fucking power and they threw everything they could at stopping the Greens from winning. Like, they're the ones who decided that the Greens were a real threat. All of their comms were about how big and scary the Greens were going to be. And they spent, I would love to know how much they spent on negative advertising against us, particularly in the last couple of weeks. Like, there's been flyers with all of the key seat candidates and about the Greens will make crime worse. There's been those Jono on a bicycle ads everywhere. There's been billboards. They did fucking scratchies. I've never seen scratchies in a political campaign before. Like, I kind of want to do scratchies, but we don't have that money.
The scratchies were so good. We were sending them around the group chat. And I think it's like unlucky. There was just so much going on in the scratchy about like how terrible it was. It said Greens lottery at the top, play two, and play win has been crossed out. It says lose. Scratch the panels to reveal what a vote for the Greens could get you. Unlucky symbols. And it's all just the Greens logo. And I assume you scratch it and it says they're going to kill your children or whatever. I don't know.
They're like traffic chaos, higher rents because the rent freeze equals higher rents apparently. I don't know. Defund the police, which we're going to do at a council level. It's just random. Like, it's just the stupidest shit. But clearly they were really worried.
Well, 6.4% swing to the Greens generally. Again, these counts are still being out there. At the time of recording, the Walter Taylor, the Michaela Sargent, the Greens candidate, is leading by 164 votes. So you'd have to say that's extremely close, and I guess we'll wait and see how that plays out. But, you know, maybe it's just another reminder. And perhaps the burden of high expectations as well. Again, the media narrative of, like, the Greens are killing it and winning stuff, which is true on a lot of fronts, but it does sort of mean, you know, I mean, there were polls predicting that there would be, what, 4 or 5 victories and stuff. There were pretty high expectations, and those expectations, you would say, haven't been met. But I assume people were having a nice time at the party last night? You went along
to the video? I got there late because I was working doing media stuff. But everyone, like, it was going off. I think there's a clip that maybe we can insert from the ABC reporter who went to the party and was, everyone's always, I guess, really impressed by what the Greens party is like. I don't know what the other parties are like because how do these people do parties if they're not partying? But anyway, I think that there are still some very interesting and impressive results to pay attention to, particularly like Enoggera. I don't know if I had mentioned Enoggera previously, but it reminds me of Cooper in 2020 during the state election, where this wasn't necessarily a target seat to start with. We weren't really talking about Enoggera so much. And yet at the time of recording, we've got like a 14%+ swing.
Wow.
And this is a very, not necessarily a resourced campaign, but a young and kind of like passionate, energetic candidate who was able to mobilize other young people on a really exciting ground campaign. Quintessa Denise there. She's like a young renter and woman of color and was campaigning on things like rent freeze. And that, I think, like particularly in the outer suburbs, there's, I might, without getting into it, because I know we've been going for a while, but I'll put a link in the show notes to this article in The Guardian kind of talking about the Greens in Queensland trying to extend beyond just the inner city and into the suburbs. And that's where, yep, I think like Inala is interesting. I think Inogra is interesting. There are a few, yeah, results from this election where I'm like, yes, because these are not just inner city. They're not wealthy, you know, professional elites issues. They are issues that affect like the suburbs more broadly.
Well, thanks for the wrap up. Well done, comrades. We did it. The fight goes on. We did something and the fight goes on.
We got one at least, I think.
Yeah, we've got some stuff. Can you see Jono running again for anything else, or is he going to?
I don't think he will. Okay. That's my take, but who knows? That's Jono.
Let us know, Jono. Send us an email. Hello@seriousdanger.com.
Right in.
Although it sounds like the joint is jumping for the Greens headquarters, Kenji.
Yes, exactly. The vibes are certainly looking very optimistic. It's the opposite of pessimistic. A lot of people there are imbibing and imbibing quite hard.
All right, briefly to another story this week, again, on the election theme, and this ties in nicely to a message from patron Brett. Hey, guys, love your work. Looking forward to the Brizzy show in April. Apologies if you've already done this, but would love a show on getting private donations, corruption out of politics, making parties slash elections publicly funded. Well, thank you for asking, Brett, because a new story this week fits in very neatly to that. So this is for you. This is the kind of service you get if you're a patron. You request stories and they appear in the news and we
cover
them.
Real life action. Yeah, yeah.
There's been a lot of talk about electoral reform and the kind of stuff the Labor government wants to do. There was a joint parliamentary committee last year that was looking into it. They handed down some recommendations about donation and spending caps. But then this week in Nine Fairfax, we got this story. Big money to be taken out of politics in radical electoral overhaul. We'll see how radical things are, but, you know, some interesting changes that have floated. Not as big.
Okay.
Billionaires such as Clive Palmer and Mike Cannon-Brookes will have their influence on politics dramatically curtailed as Labor moves to remove big money donations in the biggest shakeup to Australian election rules in a generation.
Wowee.
The Albanese government will shortly begin briefing MPs on its plans to limit the amount donated to parties and candidates in a move that will prove controversial among coalition Greens and independent MPs. In its legislation, the government will also seek to limit the amount spent in each electorate. But the rules will not apply until after the next election, as Labor gives the Australian Electoral Commission time to administer the overhaul and seeks to avoid opposition claims it is trying to game the system to win a second term. So this is Labor's plan to introduce donation caps. That's obviously caps on how much individuals and corporations and businesses and 30-party groups can actually give to political parties, and spending caps, limits on how much you can spend during an election period.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, we're on board this. This sort of seems up our angle. This would be a good news story, Emerald?
I think it's like it's Greens policy, but yep. I go back and forth personally. I don't know.
I don't know what I think by the end of this at all either, actually. I think there's some really interesting sort of wrinkles, and the details are still – many of the details are still kind of missing, which makes a big factor in it. But, yeah, I think it's interesting to see. Generally speaking, any kind of move on making our corrupt political system less corrupt is good, whether that's where we're getting to.
To be clear, I do not support corruption. I'm opposed. I condemn corruption. Yeah, I'll say it. I'm going to just say it.
What about Hamas, though?
Condemn
war crimes.
How about war crimes. Yeah.
What do you think of this idea of them scheduling this for the next, not this next election, but the one afterwards? So the next election, presumably 2025, will be a corruption bonanza.
No, I know that sounds crazy to a normal person, but also having been like part of committees that have to deal with understanding how to navigate new rules like this, because we just got some in Queensland, I'm like, no, you probably do need that time. Like, we had to hire a whole new person to do compliance after these came in.
Right, to figure out reforms. Yeah. Okay, that's probably fair enough. I will say that it is almost certainly not going to counter claims from the coalition that they're trying to rig the system for their own families. I can. You should be prepared for that, Labor. That's my only advice, is that's probably still coming down the pipeline.
Yeah.
So the status quo across the country is it's obviously different in different states and territories. There are caps that exist at the state level. In New South Wales, political donations are capped at $6,700 per year, and election spending is capped at $226,000 for a lower house seat.
Mm-hmm.
In Victoria, donations are capped at $4,320 over 4 years, so that's considerably lower, obviously, than New South Wales, but like, yeah, quite low. And what's the go in Queensland? What's the status quo there?
Oh, I can't tell you the details of the caps, but we have donation and spending caps. So I think that the donation caps maybe haven't come into effect yet for this election. It may be after this one, but right. There will be like relatively like pretty low caps on how much individuals and businesses or organizations can donate. The thing that has been introduced, like the local government elections that we just ran, and the state elections coming up, have spending caps for the wards and for like overall mayoral campaign caps, and then yes, for the state seats and overall caps. And that also applies to third parties like unions or lobby groups.
Right. And there have been specific industries that have also been limited or banned from making political donations, right?
In like property developers. So we had a review, like an inquiry into the influence of property developer donations, I think particularly on local government, local councils, and following that, property developer donations were banned in Queensland. But there are some sort of loopholes. I mean, they can still donate to the federal party. That's kind of the big one. But there are other little things like what is a related party to a developer when there could be a person who is the sole shareholder of a banned developer, like their company, their other company that they own can donate and do donate to political parties. So it's a little bit,
For other reasons. They want to influence on different issues that have nothing to do with property.
Yeah.
A third different thing. So that's the state and territory across the country, there's those sort of regulations in place. There are no donation or spending caps at the federal level in federal politics, just doesn't exist. And we know there have been some massive donation stories in recent years. In 2022, Clive Palmer famously donated $117 million to the UAP, which won him a single Senate seat, our good friend Ralph Babbitt.
Yeah, he's a really bad investor. He's a very good businessman.
And Mike Cannon-Brookes donated $1.2 million to Climate 200 at the last election.
Not a party. Independence. A party of independence. Not a party.
They're different. And they're people-powered, except for the billionaire that gives them money. Ignore the billionaires that give the Greens party. They're cool.
Yeah. I would defend Duncan Turpie with my life. Don't play poker, you good thing.
Josh Frydenberg is believed to have spent more than $3 million in his campaign to hang on to Kuo Yong during the last election. That was they're obviously all rich people there a lot of the time too, and I don't know how much Monique Ryan actually ended up spending, but yes, certainly that was a multi-million dollar campaign that had a lot of attention. And of course, in 2019, Clive Palmer again mounted this $60 million campaign without winning a single seat. He has always said that it was totally worth it because, and this is a quote to the AFR, the end game was to stop Shorten introducing his taxes in Australia and destroying the country. Scott Morrison's policies are so much better than Chris Bowen's. It was worth it to ensure those little grubs stayed out of office.
Mm-hmm.
And this, if you talk to any Labor hack post-2019, this was their biggest gripe. We lost because Clive Palmer spent this amount of money.
Yeah.
Labor's Special Minister of State, Don Farrell, has specifically cited that as he says that's the reason why Bill Shorten lost in 2019, because of the shitloads of money that Clive Palmer spent. They're not necessarily, paying this money to win seats, but to influence the election and to, basically have that sway and keep Labor out of office. That's Don Farrell's take.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that briefly? Is it both? There is an element of truth to it, and that the influence of Clive Palmer in our elections is bad, but it also is quite a convenient story that allows Labor to let itself off the hook.
Yeah, I agree. Yes.
Good. All right, ask the answer.
Next.
So the changes they're talking about include, there are some other measures which are in less part of the focus, but that includes real-time disclosure laws and lower threshold at which a person can anonymously donate. We think these are good things. They're pretty uncontroversial. So that is, people can donate anonymously up to a certain amount. We want to lower that threshold to get more transparency.
Again, an administrative pain, but still worth it.
Still worth doing.
There's also talk about truth in advertising laws to stop election lies. Okay, this was also big around there. This would be setting up a new department in the AEC to determine the truth.
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, one of those things, like, I think that, unfortunately, I'm torn because I think average people will probably be like, yes, absolutely, truth in political advertising. I think it's a good good thing to talk about politically, but in reality,
yeah,
is that not just going to mean the government of the day deciding, like, probably ruling out, I don't know, shit that the Greens would want to say, because truth kind of is subjective.
It would create powers to compel the removal of demonstrable falsehoods rather than seeking to rein in opinionated or contested claims.
That's still who decides. Like,
yes, depends the who AEC. Decides. I mean, the AEC has to make calls all the time. I suppose we do have a level of trust in the AEC as an institution to make certain calls that might be considered subjective, but we generally have a level of trust in our electoral system that such things can be determined, I suppose.
I would be curious to know how truth in political advertising laws would affect something like the attacks that were made on Jono, where they say, for example, that he published a guide on breaking and entering when he was speaking about how you probably could break into abandoned homes, which shouldn't be abandoned because there should be a vacancy levy on homes that are being left empty during a housing crisis, how you could identify those homes, et cetera. Like, maybe that is kind of true. That probably wouldn't stop that. I don't know.
Quote from Andrew Bolt, I'm against this plan to ban political lies because I do not trust our political class and our bureaucrats to know the difference between a real lie and an unpopular truth.
I'm going to say it. I agree with Andrew Bolt.
An unpopular truth like climate change isn't real, you know?
Well, no. No. Not on the shit that he's thinking. But
it's hard. I don't know. I can imagine a world in which you could imagine a department that sort of can differentiate between, okay, that is a contested political attack that is somewhat subjective, and this is a bald-faced lie, this is a misrepresentation, or this is a complete, I don't know. Maybe it is hard. Anyway, that's a chat for another day. We're still yet to see the detail on that.
Yeah.
The precise figures of the donation and spending caps that we're talking about still have not been announced. Do we know how caps have been determined at the state level? Like, how do you land on these certain figures? I don't know.
That's a good
know.
Question. I have, because I have like 1,500 in my head, but I could be totally.
I think that's like the federal anonymous. I believe that's the federal anonymous amount was 1,500, yeah. But I mean, yeah, I don't know how you get to $6,700 per year in New South Wales and $4,300 every 4 years in Victoria. I genuinely don't know. And it's particularly interesting because of this extra detail. This is, again, according to Nine Fairfax. The cap would still likely be much higher than the cap that exists in states such as Victoria, because Special Minister of State Don Farrell is concerned that it would lead to a high court challenge based on its potential impingement on the implied right to freedom of political communication. A limit in the tens of thousands may still be too low.
Yeah.
So tens of thousands of dollars, still too low for a cap. Well, so if you're getting more than $100,000, is like that's your cap, is that a meaningful cap? Obviously, it cuts out the Palmers, okay, but that's still a huge amount of money.
It is,
and,
yeah.
And in a capped world, if you can hit, obviously, most people are not going to be giving anywhere near that amount of money, anywhere near $10,000 even. In a capped world, you know, only the super rich are going to hit those upper amounts, right?
Yeah, and surely that's absolutely enough to influence political decision-making. Like, yes. I think that that's enough to make a party go, we maybe owe these guys something. I think, I just looked it up, I think in Queensland the caps are 6,000.
Okay.
Which is like cumulative
per year,
of course.
Or across the 4 years.
No, I think that it's across the years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Like the election cycle for 4 years in between
elections. The election cycle must 6, be
6,000. Okay. All right. Yeah.
But no, sorry. They might be. They're going to be adjusted from after the next election, so they might be getting lower.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. But I'm like, but yeah. So clearly, that hasn't been successfully challenged. I think they tried to challenge the ban on developer donations in Queensland on a constitutional basis and failed. Like it was upheld. The ban was upheld.
So again, for fellow Year 11 Legal Studies graduates like myself, you're across this already, but the idea that within the High Court is determined in the Constitution is an implied right, not explicit right. We barely have any rights in our fucking Constitution, but one of the implied rights is this freedom of political communication. And I suppose it is still an open question as to whether donating to a political party is part of that freedom of political communication. Of course, famously in the US, you've got the insane Citizens United case in which, hey, we have US persons have a right to freedom of speech and corporations are legally defined as persons. Therefore, corporations have the right to donate as much money as they like to political parties, mm-hmm. leading to the absolute shit show that we see in America. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that corporations should have rights. So I think that's kind of bullshit, but I guess I'm not a judge. I don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. Again, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but it's like this idea that the amount of money would meet that challenge is interesting.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
So you sort of say, okay, we have an implied right to political freedom of political communication, but if we limit it at, I don't know, $100,000 as a donation, that freedom is still available to you, but regulated.
Well, it seems to be the opposite, because if you have a low cap, doesn't that mean that there's a more equal right to be involved in the process of expressing yourself by giving money to a candidate? Whereas, like, if I don't know, yeah, when the cap is higher, that means that there is necessarily a discrepancy between the levels of power and influence that you can have on the political process based on how much money you have, because wealth inequality exists. Like,
yes, yeah. And this is the idea, right? Like, obviously, smaller contributions from a larger number of people is a more democratic, less corrupted political system. And that is obviously what we should be going for. Mass democracy, more people being involved. You know, the Bernie Sanders campaign where, you know, the average donation was, I don't know, $30 or whatever. You know, rather than the major parties' preference, which is to get shitloads of money from a very small group of people, right? To get as much money as possible from the people who are rich enough to donate. We want to obviously discourage for the political system to have any integrity. We've got to discourage that model. But surprise, surprise, it's very lucrative for the major parties. Mm. So they're resistant to change it.
Yeah. But it's interesting because as we kind of alluded to before, like the Greens have some major donors that we could not run the kind of campaigns that we do without them. Like, to be completely honest, we couldn't have run a campaign like Griffith in 2022 without some major donors. And so that's why I'm like, well, I don't know about donations caps. That would drastic. Like, I guess the argument is, well, it would put us on more of a competitive level with the major parties, but I'm just not sure that's true, because they've got so much industry backing, and particularly, you know, Labor has the unions, and like the LNP has all these kind of industry organizations and associations. As an insurgent party, I do feel that kind of, I would feel nervous about letting go of donations from individuals, to be clear. Cause I'm like, if they do have links, if they are corporations or have links to like strong links to industries like property development or, you know, fossil fuels or whatever, I don't think that we should be taking their money, but
Well, this is where it all gets a little bit messy, right? So the idea of replacing this money would come from public funding. So to fund election spending on things like advertising and pamphlets, more taxpayer funding tied to how many votes a party won is expected to flow to party headquarters. So, and this is the idea that we do have public funding of elections in a way. We also have this private donations, and that public funding is related to how many votes you get. And so this is why if you get a certain percentage of the vote in federal elections, then you're guaranteed a certain amount of public funding for your
but it's reimbursement as well. That's the thing. Like, we have cash flow problems because you don't get reimbursed till after the election.
Yeah. And obviously you can see how that kind of system benefits established political parties and is
literally entrenches power.
Yes.
Which is design.
Why Teal independent MPs and the Greens are raising some big questions about this and aren't entirely sure if this is how it's going to work. They argue capping spending in individual seats could hurt groups like the Greens, which target a handful of seats with a lot of money, as opposed to the major parties with a larger group of target seats. Green Senate leader Larissa Waters, whose party aims to spend big in a few inner city Labor seats, said the Greens would welcome real electoral reform, but are very suspicious that the two big parties will gang up to rig the system to benefit themselves and lock out smaller parties and new entrants. You've also had Simon Holmes at court, Climate 200 people sort of saying, this sets up an entry barrier to challenges like the Teal Independents and other minor parties and people who aren't necessarily associated with the Climate 200 group, but are just independents running. It sort of doesn't actually level the playing field. And there was this crazy story about them having a meeting with Don Farrell, I think last year, to just sort of to talk about this. And there's some pretty crazy quotes, right? Like Farrell apparently said, this is someone who was at the meeting, quoting what Farrell said. He said the Westminster system provides for a two-party operation, government and opposition. We all sat there and looked at each other and said, no, it doesn't. Look at the Greens. Look at the Democrats. Look at us. Another added, his whole vibe was pretty much, we don't mind the current group of Teals, but we wouldn't want many more of you because you could make life hard for Labor. That's their interpretation of his vibe. So, you know, whether it's a direct quote or not, but this seems to be like sourced idea of how this meeting went down, in which Farrell appears to have been pretty upfront about the fact that two major parties, and that's how politics works, and that's a consideration when outlining these election rules. Also, you've got concerns from the right. The coalition is worried Labor will slash corporate donations but still allow them from trade unions. The government Classic. Will introduce measures to capture unions and other third-party campaigners in the cap, but it's unclear how the legislation will deal with party affiliation fees paid by unions.
Mm.
For conservatives, the Victorian experience is instructive, so they're saying that, you know, that Victoria introduced these reforms and the Victorian Liberals got owned, which is surely because they didn't have enough money, I'm sure. Senior coalition sources, speaking on the condition of anonymity to discuss private thinking, said the opposition would be willing to deal with Labor on its proposal as long as it believed unions were not given a sweetheart deal. The protection of the two-party system is, at the end of the day, in both our interests, even if we will quibble about how other parts they in this package, it. One liberal source said.
My God, they admit it. They're like, what did I say that out loud? They said the fucking quiet part out loud.
I mean, obviously, we just want to protect the two-party system because we don't give a fuck about democracy, but these unions. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, really wild shit of the insight there.
Mm.
And there was also a Twitter thread, which you can put in the show notes too, from Rob Bailiw. This is the former Liberal Premier's son who was really involved with the Minnick Ryan campaign. Who kind of lays out, I guess, the Teal objections on this stuff, particularly sort of saying, you know, yes, if you're targeting in a certain seat or whatever you, or if you're running a national campaign,
mm.
this idea of limiting the amount of donations or spending you can do in individual seats affects you differently, I suppose. Mm. This is where expenditure caps becomes a massive risk to democracy. An independent cap to 500K in expenditure can raise those funds against their one seat. Whilst a party can raise 500K across 151 seats, the party can then average that money across all 151 seats. This means they can claim they've spent 500K on one seat when in actual fact they've spent $3 million on that seat. Think expenses like social media. Like, I do think that's an interesting question. If you have a national ad campaign, for example, how does that spending relate to your spending in a specific seat?
Yeah, well, I think how it works in Queensland is that there are seat-based caps and then there's an overall cap for the party or organisation or statewide or citywide if it's local government. So I would imagine that that's the logical way to do it.
Yes. Okay. Right. Okay. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, I'm a little bit confused. I'm not sure what the alternative being articulated is. And I think if we talk a big game on getting money out of politics and evening the playing field, then I think when a reform like this comes along, you know, the critiques are important. But I guess I'm uncomfortable with the idea that we end up at the place where we're saying, oh, no, these super rich people should be able to give us as much money as possible. Like, we need to be able to, you know, walk the walk.
Yeah.
I guess the other factor is, like, I guess the vision is to try and change the whole way we do elections rather than trying to think about how we run elections as we currently do with the current financing structure, right? So the dream, of course, would be to everyone gets, you know, can sort of reach the same limits of a reasonable amount of money and the rest of it is powered by volunteers, people campaigns, and, you know, ideally a battle of ideas and campaigning rather than a battle of shitload of money. That's the dream that we're heading to.
But it's also, yeah, it's like you need to, there's then that balance between a grassroots community-led campaign that involves a huge volunteer effort and also realizing that, like, maybe you kind of you need to pay people to do shit. I mean, I think what's interesting, and I don't know if this is the case for other caps or for the caps that are proposed for spending in particular, in Queensland, staffing doesn't count towards the caps. It's like it's spending on advertising mostly. Right. And staffing is obviously the Greens' major expense because we need organisers to run door knocks and shit.
Yes. Yes.
So, like, I think that is particularly – that's an interesting question, right? I don't know.
So when they talk about spending caps, they really just mean – I mean, yeah, the production costs of material, but mainly advertising, right? Yeah.
Mm, mm.
I mean, there was a crazy story. Yeah, apparently Frydenberg spent something like $2 million just to buy up ad space around Kooyong, both to, you know, flog his message, but also just to deny Meg Ryan and the Teals from buying up their own respective ad space as well. Just, you know, bought that up and said that's ours. Thanks.
Yeah.
I mean, you would have to, yes, also these reforms would have to be paired with like a robust publicly funded election system. You know, like the AEC should host fucking candidate debates and stuff. Like we should have a infrastructure that is neutral and run by the AEC rather than leaving up the current system, which is just whatever community group or business forum lunch or whatever wants to host candidates. They can choose which candidates to invite, all that kind of shit. Like you would hope that that would also have to be part of the bigger picture that, yes, take the money out of it publicly. Yes, it will cost taxpayer money, but it's our goddamn democracy and it's worth spending money on.
And the final thing as well, like I think the other kind of devil in the detail issue is what you define as being engaged in electoral campaigning and are then, you know, what's covered by caps on spending and donations, because one of the big issues is a group that like just a grassroots organization run by ordinary people who aren't associated with a political party. If they are distributing signs that say Climate Action Now, this was became an issue in Queensland, for example, should they then be covered by electoral spending caps? They're like, we're campaigning for climate action, but they, you know, may be covered under caps and then be forced to limit how much their campaign on an issue, something that they as a community care about. Like that I think is concerning, and that goes to, how you define who's covered under electioneering.
Right. And then, you know, the questions around GetUp and Advance Australia. Yeah. How do they fit into picture? What about Australian government ads that are about educating the public, that are totally campaign ads, that are just like, the Australian government is awesome and great and we're really good and this is a message from us and we're just spending millions of dollars on this campaign that appears on your telly just to let you know, just to inform you that we're awesome and, oh, there also happens to be an election coming up at some point, but just FYI, we're great.
I know.
Not in a campaign ad, just a message from the Australian government.
I know, but then like it's similar to the truth in political advertising stuff that I think part of me is like, yeah, but maybe I'm just a socialist dreamer, like, but what about when the Greens are in government and we want to talk about, like, it will be very hard for us to keep government and, like, you know, the fucking course of history could change based on whether or not we can communicate to the public the benefit of, like, socialist reform. And I kind of do want to be like, well, we should be able to do that without maybe, without a body that is probably steeped in neoliberal tradition adjudicating whether that is valid advertising or not. I don't know.
Nor do I. Sorry, we don't have heaps of answers here. I think it's really interesting to see where this is going to go, and I'd be interested to see how the party sort of comes out and formulates a solid position. But interesting that this kind of stuff is on the way and coming down the pipeline.
You might have heard that a developer wants to build 3,600 apartments right on top of the water here at Moreton Bay. The Greens are supporting the community's fight to stop this development.
Authorised by Kay Cara, Greens Brisbane.
Speaking of coming down the pipeline, not really, it's not a pipeline, but it's a decision that might be coming down the pipeline soon from Environment Minister Tanya Plibersek. Toondah Harbour. I don't know if we've spoken about Toondah Harbour on the show before, but call to action this week would be to contact Minister Plibersek's office and tell her to reject the Toondah Harbour development. It's going through EPBC. Referral needs to be approved by her. This has been a proposal that has been on the cards for years and years, including from way back when I was a candidate in Bowman. It's a proposal to build 3,600 apartments on top of internationally Ramsar-listed protected wetlands in Moreton Bay, in like just outside of Brisbane. And it would, destroy habitat, particularly for migratory shorebirds, and there's koala habitat, there's dugongs, et cetera. It's just a shitty, stupid fucking idea, and they should just build a public port there, which was the justification for doing the development in the first place. So contact Minister Plibersek's office, ask her to reject it. She's apparently been doing the rounds, meeting with stakeholders, and people think there's a decision coming soon, so lots of pressure is good. We'll put the number in the show notes, and there's also a script that the Greens have put together on their website. We'll put the link for that in the show notes too.
Want to say shout out and good luck to Tasmanian comrades. The state election is next Saturday on the 23rd. We are gunning for Tabitha Badger and all the other candidates. Hopefully you get up. And, with more seats in the Tasmanian Parliament, hopefully that means good news for Greens and you can sort out the insane state of Tasmanian politics, which we covered
on
the
show. Get something together before I visit in May. I'm visiting Tasmania in May. I'd like there to be some more Greens reps. Thanks.
Is that your first time? You haven't been before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great. Awesome. Also, next Sunday is Palm Sunday as well. This happens every year, whether you're religious or not. You know, it has religious roots as a traditional day. today, but has basically become a worldwide walk for refugee rights and a more humane Australia and world. And I'm sure there'll be lots of Palestine solidarity at these marches as well. Mm. We'll put a link in the show notes for the kind of marches that are happening right across the country on Sunday next week for Palm Sunday 2024.
Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening now. That was a pretty good show, right? Would you say it was 5-star worthy? If so, you should say that on the review. And tell your friends. Tell your friends about the show. Share our stuff on socials. We're at SeriousDangerAU on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. You can find links to the Patreon with a bunch of bonus episodes, to the live shows, to merch. Well, there's a little bit left, but more merch is coming soon. And all the stuff at SeriousDangerPod.com. Not come, no, .com, sorry. We're working on that website. That's coming later. You can email us about that and any other complaints. hello@seriousdangerpod.com.
That's where you can find all the Serious Danger / fiction. Is it seriousdangerpod.com? Goodbye.
Bye.
Serious Danger Australia.